Hello, welcome to Global Business. When the monsoon rains burst over Mumbai, it's just another thing that India's booming business capital has to cope with, like those terrible terrorist bombings earlier this year. The bombers targeted the first-class carriages of Mumbai trains, hitting the newly prosperous traders and business people who commute in and out of the crowded city centre every day. This is a place of quite extraordinary contrasts. Vultures in the hills, a new cadre of super-rich swarming into apartments built where the city's former cotton mills stood, and the even faster-growing ranks of slum dwellers who followed their dreams from the country to the city and now cluster in their own cities along municipal water pipes. Doing business in Mumbai means a dialogue between modernity and the city's grimy realities, which I warn you, we'll hear about in a minute.
Bombay wants to become the new Shanghai.
The acclaimed writer Sukheta Mehta is the author of the wonderful book Maximum City, Bombay Lost and Found. It's a memoir of the New Yorker's return to the city of his birth.
The management consultancy McKinsey came up with a plan for Bombay's future, and all eyes in the city's government are set firmly on Shanghai. There's just one difference. Shanghai is in communist China, a country with a huge amount of central government authority. India, in many ways, is functioning anarchy.
Visitors to Mumbai are quickly aware of that functioning anarchy, which extends right down to some of the most basic human functions. Mumbai is a city of pungent realities. Listen to the filmmaker Prahlad Kakkar. A few years back, he won an Oscar nomination for his short film with a title I'm not allowed to spell out here, all about how Mumbai men have no shame about, well, defecating in public in broad daylight. Prahlad Kakkar decided to ask the question, where can one excrete in Mumbai without getting arrested?
We found that most of the city was an open toilet and you would never get arrested. When we shot the film, the crew, of course, took the easy way out and put a tele lens onto it and shot it from across the road from a certain distance of safety. And when I saw the rushes of the first few days, I said, this is not working.
Not close enough up.
It has to be wide and close, and I must be able to smell it. And so the only way they could do it was put a hidden camera in a little bag and squat with the best of them. Because that's the only way they could actually get away.
That was an essential truth about Mumbai that may disappear.
No, not at all. I've always noticed that there's a psychology in this whole business. There's a very strong group who believe that the joys of abluting in the great outdoors is far more pleasurable than sitting confined in some little concrete block hole with a hole in the ground, smelling somebody else's leftover ablutions. So a lot of them, even if given the choice, actually we'll find ways and means to do a guerrilla ablutory act. So I think outdoor ablutions are never going to die in this city, regardless of the fact that you might provide them with the perfect modern toilet and give them all kinds of amenities. But the sheer joy of going out for a walk in the morning among the bushes and whatever else it is, hearing the birds chirp, watching your neighbor, you know, talking to him about the rest of the day. There's a lot of social behavior that happens.
You make me want to rush out and do it.
It's the same thing like a little pub, you know, where the British go and drink at pubs and meet each other and discuss their lives and days. We do it over a crap.
But the documentary maker earns a living shooting television advertisements like this one in a Mumbai disco. 5, 6, 7, 8. Eye-catching young men and women rise to the music. A glamorous girl walks onto the dance floor. She makes eye contact with a glamorous boy. Before your eyes and those of millions of viewers, behold the new consumer India.
We're shooting a commercial for a brand called Parachute. Parachute is a hair care range of products. And this is called an aftershave, which is a styling cream for hair, for men. And the brand ambassador for this particular brand is a man called Yuvraj Singh, and he's a very popular young cricketer, other than being a good-looking hunk.
And he gets the girl?
The girl gets him. I think we're turning that whole thing around.
checking. Order Himanshu.
Okay, sound. Guys, you guys, going good.
Watching the cameras roll for this advertisement his company is paying for is the brand manager, Samir Satpathy.
Indians are getting younger and richer. 55% of our population is under the age group of 25 years. There is a young population which is coming up. The purchasing power of this young population is going up. So you're using two movements, which is suddenly creating a market which was not there maybe a few years back. So we see that with changing times, we need to bring in grooming products which are a little upper end, which would have existed only in salons in India for the top end. Now that would become the middle class, and it's happening right before our eyes.
And you've got places to sell these in, have you? Shops with a suitable sort of ambience, because that was lacking in India until recently.
Yeah, retail is opening up, and retail is going to accelerate the process of the introduction of these products. But we expect these products to start moving not only in malls, but also in what we call as tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 towns. Because today with television and the net, it's one country. It's about an urban mindset. It's not about urban India.
Allah ke bande haside, Allah ke bande.
Oblivious of the frenzy of desire being pumped up by the advertising shoot next door, in the location's green room, the mystical Sufi composer Kailish Kher breaks into one of his own songs. It's about a bird with broken wings. But when he's not meditating on the divine, Kher embraces the new India. He also records the jingles for the ads for the new hair creams, toothpaste and shampoos, which Indian consumers are now turning to. Does Kailish Kher not feel an inner conflict between the sacred and the profane?
No, it's not that, because the timings and the conditionings are very different. When I'm singing jingles, I'm somebody else at that moment, because the kind of singing I'm doing for a commercial, It takes only 20 minutes maximum to record the thing. And when I'm doing concert, when I'm performing, when I'm recording for my album or something, then I sit in my meditation, I write words. And that goes in a different genre altogether, different route altogether.
And the commercial world doesn't corrupt the spiritual world, does it?
Never. It doesn't really affect. And still there is a soul in the work, because then you have to study the product, the concept of the advertising. And immediately we understand and then go to the mic and slam the thing.
It's about professionalism.
Listen, all I want to do is make her a little more dominant in the frame. Otherwise, keep the frame the way it is.
This is Global Business from the BBC World Service. I'm Peter Day, this week on location in Mumbai, in the middle of an advertising film shoot about a new product for upwardly mobile Indian young males, an after-shower hair cream.
If it's going to be awkward, trust me, you and everybody else will be rehearsing this till tomorrow morning. I guarantee you that.
The filmmaker Prahlad Kakkar is suddenly having trouble with his actors. The glamorous model and the heartthrob personality, a cricket player, seem reluctant to kiss in public. And that's not the only tension Kakkar experiences between the new India and the old India in his line of work.
We are part of a process which is converting a relatively agrarian society, in terms of numbers, into a consumer society. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. We've accepted that globalization and economic growth is the secret to success and wealth and standard of living. But I'm not 100% convinced.
And there's still that sort of tug of war in the Indian mind, is there?
Well, there's a tug of war because the fallout of a westernized driven economy, which is a capitalist society, is so obvious. In terms of alienation, in terms of disruption of families, in terms of value systems, in terms of erosion of morality, and so forth and so on.
But you hear no such misgivings from the business executive and brand manager of Parachute, Samir Satpathy. By training, he's an economic and a social Darwinist.
If you don't move forward, you die. It's as simple as that. And that's the basic rule of capitalism. Either you produce, and you produce to today's context, for today's consumer, and also for tomorrow's consumer. And if you don't plan for tomorrow's consumer, you're not going to survive. People are saying that we're taking away jobs. It's because we are more efficient. The same principle applies within the country also. If guys don't move on, they will die. So in the end, you will only have people who are efficient. You will not have people who are not.
But you've set up an example that's very imitable in even cheaper countries. If they can do, say, the English, if they can do the quite a lot of the outsourcing that is done in Bangalore and places like that at the moment, they take the jobs away, don't they, from India, straight away.
We welcome competition. If competition increases in the world, we will need to change. The way I see it, we'll move up the value chain. Today, what you're seeing is the tip of the iceberg. It's just the beginning. We are hungrier, better trained, and we are ready to take on the world.
I've decided to brave the Mumbai monsoon to test this new India thesis on one of the country's most trenchant social observers, the author and socialite Shobha Day. What does she think of the pace of change here?
It's been aggressive, and for a lot of Indians, perhaps the pace has been a bit of a scorcher. And young India is completely ready for the change. But middle-aged India, someone like myself, with young children, I must say even I'm a little breathless.
What about things like arranged marriages in a wealthier India? Does that persist? That's a very traditional way of life.
It does persist, but not in the way the West perceives the arranged marriage. The arranged marriage, as I understand it, and I'm all for it, by the way, is far more democratic. There's no coercion involved. It's just that parents know the preferences of their children a little better than the children sometimes do themselves. It's as okay as one of my kids turning around and saying, I've found someone that I'd like you to meet, and we've decided to get married.
As the map of the world changes, as India and China get to the top, great geopolitical change will probably follow the economic changes as well. Will Chinese-Indian influences make the world, the blocks of the world, behave differently?
I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that that's going to happen. India seems to be everywhere and on everybody's mind. And whether it's high street fashion or it's the food, I mean, I'm talking about cultural influences, whether it's in popular music, and Indian music seems to be the sort of craze in lounge bars across the world. It starts with that. As countries with a very large population of extremely intelligent, educated and skilled people, it pretty much looks like it's going to be our century.
Very exciting for you, isn't it?
Very exciting. Very exciting for my children's generation. I think they're going to see an India that I could not have even dreamt of.
And they have choices you would not have dreamt of too.
All sorts of goodies lined up for them, which were unimaginable when I was a child. So for me, the future is so bright, I'm wearing shades already.
But any visitor has to question the depth of India's optimism. So many of these giddy visions of the country's future seem to exclude the vast majority of India's 1.2 billion people, the poor. Let's drop in on a business which is thriving on Mumbai's growing wealth and stature. Naresh Fernandez is editor of the information and entertainment magazine Time Out Mumbai. In its pages, glossy advertisements and profiles of Mumbai's bright young things share column inches with stories about just how wretched things are for the majority who live in the city's slums.
We, being located in Mumbai, cannot be a rara party magazine all the time, because we have to acknowledge the fact that 60% of the city does live in slum, that we are going through a huge metamorphosis now that will determine whether we join the ranks of sub-Saharan Africa or whether we actually realize our ambition to become that awful thing, Shanghai.
How's the metamorphosis going at the moment?
We're seeing central Bombay turn into islands of prosperity. For we're seeing the first gated communities that are emerging in Bombay. These islands of prosperity among an ocean of dereliction. This is not good.
So here you are celebrating Bombay as a city of great energy and activity, and yet you have enormous doubts about the process you're celebrating in the magazine.
We take a realistic view of it.